Aaron IB are delighted that thanks to the ongoing support of the Booker Prize Foundation, Aaron IB have once again been able to produce accessible versions of the winning novel along with the rest of the shortlist. The prize is the world's most important literary award and was the first to introduce a clause in their rules that ensures the production of the shortlisted titles in accessible formats. All six of the shortlisted books are available in giant print, in Braille, and as audiobooks through the National Library Service, and can also be bought in Braille from RNIB's online shop. The 2012 Man Booker Prize went to Hilary Mantel for Bring Up the Bodies.
His children are falling from the sky. He watches from horseback, acres of England stretching behind him. They drop, gilt-winged, each with a blood-filled gaze. Grace Cromwell hovers in thin air. She is silent when she takes her prey, silent as she glides to his fist. But the sounds she makes then, the rustle of feathers and the creak, the sigh and riffle of pinion, the small cluck-cluck from her throat, these are sounds of recognition, intimate, daughterly, almost disapproving. Her breast is gore-streaked, and flesh clings to her claws.
Christopher Oxford reading Bring Up the Bodies from RNIB's National Library Service. I spoke to Hilary on the phone, and first of all I asked her how this moment felt.
The winner of the 2012 Man Booker Prize for Fiction is Bring Up the Bodies by Hilary Mantel.
I was just incredibly surprised. I come to the evening very, very tense, but fully expecting to walk away empty-handed. I suppose everybody thinks, well, you know, I'm not that lucky. I'm not going to win again. You think my life's not like that.
Now, I've heard you say that Bring Up the Bodies was a much harder book to write than Wolf Hall. Was part of that difficulty because the previous book had won the Booker and there was perhaps a little more pressure on you this time?
Well, it was more difficult only in the writing itself. It took more out of me. It was much more intense. It wasn't technically more difficult. It was only difficult in the wear and tear on the emotions. And I have to say, really, when you sit down to write and you're deeply immersed in a project, the last thing you're thinking about is prizes. In my experience, you're only thinking about your material. So I wasn't at any point in writing that book thinking, I wonder how this will do with the Man Booker Prize. I was only concentrating on getting my story told and seeing my characters through to their various end points.
Now, you mentioned there the word intense, and there's certainly a much more intense period of time in this book.
Yes. Wolf Hall is a big sprawling book and the action covers 30 years and even more because it goes back into prehistory, into myth, to look at the myths about how Britain began. But Bring Up the Bodies, which starts where Wolf Hall leaves off in the September of 1535, it covers only a 9-month span. And of that 9 months, the last half of the book covers about 3 weeks as the events lead up to the climax of the execution of Anne Boleyn.
Now, we know it leads up to that execution. Do you think it's strange that everyone knows the ending to this book apart from the characters in the book?
Yes. Well, that's right. But what I try to do is to put the reader in the same imaginative plane as the characters, so the reader doesn't perceive it as inevitable, but the reader sees the turning points that caused history to work out the way it did.
Now, what do you prefer writing about? I'll call them light and dark, the light areas that are well documented in history, or the dark areas of these times that we know nothing about?
I suppose with the light areas, then you think, well, a thing may be well documented, but there may be versions of that documentation. There may be gaps in that documentation. There may be documents that should exist but don't exist. You have something to hang on to. But even with some, with an event that appears to be well documented, you're saying, who's telling me this? Why do they want me to believe this? Is there another version told from another point of view? And where are the gaps? And so, in some respects, if you approach all documentation and all of what we refer to as recorded history in that same spirit of skepticism, then in some ways the difference between the light and the dark areas vanishes, because what you see is the shadow behind the light. And so there is really nothing I take for granted beyond, you know, those established days in the calendar on which the axe fell. We often know what happened, but it's the why. That's what I'm dealing in. And every why is dappled with both the light and the dark.
Do you think she, Anne Boleyn, sorry, was guilty of adultery?
No, I think she probably wasn't. But that doesn't mean that I see her as a victim. I think it was a fact that she was not a victim. She was a political player, and she was a big player on the political scene, and she went into battle and she lost. And I don't think she herself would have liked to be seen as a victim. Having said that, I know that she was living her life against the backdrop of a culture that was misogynistic. And it was an easy accusation to fling against a woman, and utterly destructive. The idea of a queen who broke her marriage vows, because what you're saying here is a queen who could put an illegitimate child on the throne of England, a queen who could pull the wool over a nation's eyes. So any accusation of that type levelled against Anne came very near the question of national security. There's a very fine line there between adultery and treason. And I think that although we will never know, I think the probability was that she was fitted up. But she had created the climate in which that could occur. You cannot imagine how the same mechanism could have been used to destroy Henry's first queen, Catherine of Aragon. He simply couldn't. She was above reproach. That's not to say that it was Anne's fault in any way, but I do think that, you know, she was part of the political scene in which she rose and fell. She was not a doll. She was not a passive victim.
Now, what period will you cover in the next book, The Mirror and the Light?
I will cover the I will take the story up probably at that moment when Anne Boleyn's head falls, as Thomas Cromwell and his son and his colleagues are walking away from the scaffold. And I will continue till 1540, till Cromwell's own death on the same scaffold in the Tower of London.
Now, there's definitely only going to be one more book, because you said there was going to be two and then there was three. Do you think there might be a fourth?
No, I think the arc of this one is pretty clear. There is no calamitous event, no central event like the fall of Anne Boleyn. In the first book, everything led to the death of Thomas More. In the second, everything led to the death of Anne Boleyn. In the third, everything leads to the death of Cromwell, which doesn't mean to say it's a story of Cromwell's fall, because it's a story of his rise and rise and rise. But what happens now is that the pattern changes. instead of working towards one great climax in the action, from now on, every day is more or less a crisis for Cromwell. There are no downtimes, there are no quiet times, there is no prospect of reflection or recollection or ease. He's living in an intensely pressurized environment, watching his enemies grouping, sometimes defeating them, but then finally not defeating them.
And when do you think we'll see the final book?
Well, now, about that, I'm making no predictions. Works are fictional, inherently unpredictable, which is why my one book turned into two and my two into three. But I intend to work on it very hard next year. As far as I can, I'm pushing other commitments aside. Already they are creeping into my diary, things that can't be helped. But I do hope to spend the bulk of that year concentrating, and at the end of it, I will see where I get. I wouldn't like it to be later than 2015, but I doubt it would be much sooner.
Now, we heard at the beginning, Chris Oxford reading from Bring Up the Bodies. How important is it for you that your books are available in Braille, giant print and in audio?
It's very important because, you know, you want these barriers to accessibility to be broken down. You want your books, your words, to reach those readers who want them and are ready for them. You don't want any barriers in the shape of black lines on the page to be keeping people out.
Bring Up the Bodies and indeed Wolf Hall are available from RNIB in Braille, giant print and in audio from the National Library Service. For more information on these and other Booker winning and Booker shortlisted books, head to www.rnib.org.uk.